continue maintenant avec une présentation en anglaise sur cognitive developments during adolescence. Stephanie Burnett, you have the floor. Go ahead. We're looking ahead to your presentation.
Thank you. I hope you'll accept my sincere apologies for speaking in English. It's my great pleasure to be here at this fascinating meeting and in this beautiful city of Paris. I work at the UCL Institute of Cognitive Neuroscience in London with Sarah Jane Blakemore. And our research group focuses on social cognitive development during adolescence and how that's related to brain development. So that's what I'll be talking to you about now. So this is an overview of what I'll be talking about. I'll start off by way of introduction. I'll summarise some evidence for social change during adolescence, that is, changes in social behaviour and social understanding. Then I'll introduce the concept of the social brain, which is the brain regions which are used for social cognition. Then I will discuss evidence for development during adolescence of the neural strategies for social cognition. After that, I'll conclude and draw out some implications. So, start off, what's the evidence that there's continuing social development during adolescence? Well, some of the evidence comes from work with animals. It's hard to tell what animal adolescence is, but the work that we have suggests that there are social changes in certain species. For example, in rodents such as rats, adolescents seem to show more social play than both younger and older animals. On the primate side, adolescent primates might play less than their younger members of their species, but they'll show more affiliative behaviours towards their peers. And by peers, I mean same-age individuals that are not directly related to them. So these affiliative behaviours include things like grooming, pair-sitting and huddling. They also begin to disperse into new social groups at adolescence. So adolescent social behaviours in animals are adaptive. They bring new reproductive opportunities and allow the animal to explore new territory and perhaps gain new resources. It's also been suggested that a lot of adolescent behaviours are actually responses to decreases in adult tolerance, as their parents may start to drive them away from the family territory a bit. So that's animals. So what about humans? Well, decades of social psychology research have suggested that social behaviour is different at adolescence. For example, human adolescents report that they are the most happy and stimulated when talking with their peers. This is in contrast to earlier in childhood when they might feel more happy at home with their family. Also, relationships with peers become more emotionally supportive at adolescence, and they become more complex and multi-layered. For example, an adolescent individual will have intense one-to-one relationships. They'll also be a member of a small clique of, say, about 7 individuals. And then they'll also have membership of a larger crowd, which may share the same interests in music, perhaps, or the same way of dressing. Here's an example of adolescent crowd. Relationships start to define identity to a greater extent than they did previously. So that's social psychology evidence. Now, social cognitive evidence. There is some evidence that the ability to read emotions from faces is still developing during the adolescent years. And in addition, emotional perspective taking still seems to be developing. I expect in the next 10 years, this slide will begin to fill up a bit more, but we don't have much evidence now on adolescent social cognitive development, but soon perhaps we will have more. So that's some evidence that there's social change happening during adolescence. So now what about the social brain? How the brain implements social cognition? By social brain, I mean the key brain regions that are important for social cognition, where social cognition involves the abilities required to understand and interact with other people. So now I'll go through a few key brain regions that are important for social cognition. I'll start with the medial prefrontal cortex. This brain region is thought to be involved in mentalizing, which is the implicit ability to infer mental states such as beliefs, feelings, and desires. It's a bit like what you need to do the false belief task like Maxie and the chocolate that you've heard about this morning. So this is where it is here. This is the front of the brain. This is the eyes would be here. This is the back of the brain. So the medial prefrontal cortex is at the front of the head, front of the brain, in between the two cerebral hemispheres. So this brain region is very important for representing people's mental states. I'll give you an example. As I'm talking to you here, you begin to represent my mental state, what I understand and I'm trying to tell you. And at the same time, I'm trying to represent your representation of my mental state. So the medial prefrontal cortex is going to be very important for this sort of thing. Second social brain region I'm going to talk about is the posterior STS at the temporoparietal junction. You can see it here. It's about here. This brain region is involved in social prediction and perspective taking. For example, what can somebody see based on where they are? What does somebody want based on where they're looking? So you can see immediately that this person wants the cake. Probably this brain region is important for that. Thirdly, the amygdala, which was referred to in Professor Bertos's talk, I think. The subcortical limbic structure is involved in attaching reward values to social and non-social stimuli. And what do I mean by this? Well, it will attach, say the sight of your mother smiling, it will attach a positive value to that. It will say, you should approach this. The sight of your mother frowning or perhaps some other unpleasant sight, it will attach a value of negative, you should avoid this too. So this is what the amygdala does in social cognition. Lastly, the temporal poles at the anterior end of the temporal lobe are thought to be involved in representing semantic social knowledge, perhaps in the form of scripts about what usually happens in different social situations, for example, what you might expect to happen when you go to a restaurant or when you visit your grandmother, for example. So this is really representing abstract knowledge of complex social events. So that's brain regions involved in mentalizing social brain regions. So why have I told you this? Why do we care? Well, you might recognize this picture, actually. It was in the talk by Olivier... I can't remember his name. Yeah, Ude. This picture actually shows the brain regions that are still developing between childhood and adulthood. And you can see in blue the regions that are still developing during adolescence. So immediately, you can see that the medial prefrontal cortex is still developing and the STS is still developing. So these are brain regions where the flesh of the brain is still maturing during adolescence. As I've said, during adolescence, parts of the social brain undergo neuroanatomical development. So the question that we're asking in my lab, in Sarah Blakemore's lab, is do adolescents use their social brains differently from adults? This brings me on to the main body of my talk, in which I'll talk about this question and in particular discuss one experiment. So to answer this question of whether adolescents use their social brains differently from adults, we designed an fMRI paradigm to look at the living social brain in adolescents and adults. The picture on the right shows somebody about to go into an MRI scanner. This is a sort of brain scanner that's safe for children. It's just basically a big electromagnet, and soon she will put her head inside the magnet there, and we'll be able to see her brain in action while alive. This sort of technology was not around 15 years ago. So we decided to scan 18 adolescents and 10 adults in fMRI. while they were doing a social task, we decided to look at social emotions. So what do I mean by social emotion? Well, we define social emotions as emotions which require the representation of other people's mental states. For example, if I'm feeling guilty, then I'm representing the idea that somebody has been harmed because of my actions, or somebody would disapprove of my actions. So I'm representing someone else's mental states. If I feel embarrassed, it's because I think somebody else would think that I'm looking ridiculous. So these are social emotions. In contrast, the non-social or basic emotions, such as the basic disgust which you feel when you suddenly smell something really horrible, these only require an awareness of your own internal state. They don't require mentalising. This is how we defined them. It's been previously shown that social emotion activates parts of the social brain network. So this is what we got our volunteers to do while they were lying down in the scanner. You can imagine you would be just lying down and reading these sentences. We asked them to silently read sentences such as, "You laughed when your friend told you she was feeling upset," and imagine that it was taking place. So imagine that was happening to them. I'll just give you a moment to read the rest of the sentences. So we have social emotion sentences and basic emotion sentences. So we looked at the results, our brain imaging results. We took brain activity to the social emotion sentences and brain activity to the basic emotion sentences, and we compared the two. So our question was, which brain regions are activated more for social emotion than for basic emotion? So we found that, as predicted, the medial prefrontal cortex was active in both age groups for social versus basic emotion. This is consistent with the role for mentalising in social emotion. So both age groups activated this mentalising region. So then we wanted to look at age group differences in social versus basic emotion. What are adolescents activating more than adults? What are adults activating more than adolescents? We found, indeed, that adolescents activated the medial prefrontal cortex more than the adults did for social versus basic emotion. And you can see on this slide even that the adolescents show more activity in the medial prefrontal cortex than the adults do. This picture shows another view of this brain region. It shows the region that the adolescents activated more than the adults for this comparison. And this shows a graph of activity to social versus basic emotion in the medial prefrontal cortex, decreasing with age between age 10 and age 32. So adolescents are activating the mentalising region more. In contrast, we found that the adults activated the left temporal pole more than adolescents did for social versus basic emotion. Here you can see the temporal pole down here, a region I described to you in my introduction. And here you can see it again. So this is a brain region that adults have activated more than the adolescents. This graph shows activity within the left temporal pole to social versus basic emotion, increasing with increasing age. So what we concluded from this fMRI study of social emotion was that the neural strategy for thinking about social emotion situations develops between adolescence and adulthood. Specifically, adolescents activate the medial prefrontal cortex more, which you can see again here, brain region involved in mentalising, whereas adults activate the temporal pole more, which is thought to represent social semantic knowledge. So it could be the case that these brain imaging results reflect different cognitive strategies between the two age groups, but more research is needed to test that hypothesis. Recent studies looking at adolescent social cognition have found a similar pattern to this study I've just described. This slide is taken from a paper in Nature Reviews Neuroscience, which is a meta-analysis of these adolescent studies of social cognition. And in this paper, it's described how all of these studies have found that a similar decrease in activity within this region between childhood and adolescence, or adolescence and adulthood, which is very interesting. These studies have used different tasks, from different unemotional tasks, tasks based on understanding how your intentions would cause your behaviour, and tasks where people have to understand subtle linguistic meaning. So, for example, where people have to decide whether a speaker is being sarcastic, ironic or not. So these are tasks which tap very different aspects of social cognition and mentalising, but they've all found this very similar result of decreased medial prefrontal cortex activity with age. So now I'll proceed on to the conclusions and implications of these. Recent fMRI studies have shown that the neural strategies for social cognition are still developing during adolescence. This morning you've heard about the various developments that there are during early childhood and middle childhood. These studies suggest that there may still be developments occurring later than childhood, in fact during adolescence. However, at the same time, there are many other changes taking place. Neuroanatomical development is taking place. In this brain region, grey matter is decreasing in volume, white matter is increasing in volume. It's thought that this might result in speeded and more efficient neural processing. We don't know how this is related to cognitive development. Do these neuroanatomical developments allow qualitatively different cognitive strategies to be used, or are they merely related in some less interesting way? Social abilities are also developing during adolescence. There are changes in social behaviour and changes in social understanding. How are these changes related to brain development and to the development in the neural strategies for social cognition? Lastly, an adolescent experiences new social environments and new ideas at this time of life. In England, people go to a different school at about the start of adolescence, around age 12. Does this cause different cognitive and behavioural changes independent of the changes in the brain? So a big question which I'd be very interested to see answered over the next few decades are, how are all these changes during adolescence causally related to each other? This is my last slide. Due to the changes in the brain and the changes in cognition that happening during adolescence, adolescence may be a time of particular vulnerability, perhaps vulnerability to negative social inputs, perhaps vulnerability to destructive ideas, such as we heard about earlier this morning. However, the flip side of vulnerability, as this photograph sort of illustrates, is opportunity. While adolescents may be vulnerable because their brains are still developing, there's also great opportunity for social cognitive development and social understanding. Perhaps beneficial social and emotional influences during this time of life will have very good effects, perhaps more effect than later on in life. Finally, there are various implications which extend outside of neuroscience and psychology. Are there social and welfare implications? Because the brain is still developing during this time of life, should we provide a more socially supportive environment for adolescents to learn and interact in? Are there legal implications? If adolescents' understanding of other people and their perspectives is still developing, will this affect the legal process, young offenders and so on? And finally, are there educational implications? Should adolescents be learning in a more emotionally supportive environment at school? Should they be taught about other points of view? And this is where I will finish. First, I'd like to acknowledge my volunteers who have brain scans and my colleagues at the UCL Institute of Cognitive Neuroscience. Thank you.